buy-in. From They Just Don't Care to I Can Barely Keep Up, Chapter 5. Every individual who has grown attached to an organization or project has been disappointed by others' apathy. You start to wonder why others within the organization seem like they don't care. It's such a grand, noble cause. Why don't they love it? What's their problem? Such saddening realizations can leave you to lament. Is my vision not seductive enough? Am I really doing my best? How can I make them care like I do? With the organization's purpose in place and your minions multiplying their efforts via the commitment coefficient, you might expect everyone to welcome each project that advances the mission of the organization. But alas, such fervor is not always the case. To get the most commitment out of each individual on a given project, leaders must work to create buy-in, that feeling of ownership associated with possessing one's very own chunk of a project. But often members just don't feel like taking a piece of ownership. Getting individual members to buy often includes a proactive selling process. So in this chapter, you'll become a salesperson better able to procure buy-in from the stingiest of students. In a nutshell, you'll discover why they aren't listening to you and what to do about it. Specifically, you'll learn 1, a powerful apathy explanation you probably overlooked. 2, how to combat the shirkers. 3, who the influencers are. 4, 2 ways to customize your message for the listener. 5, 3 universal principles of influence. How come they're not listening? What follows is a radical invitation to consider something that may not have ever occurred to you. You are wrong. Indeed, many student leaders overlook this omnipresent possibility. A solid chance exists that your idea just stinks. So if you're wondering why you're not getting enthusiastic support from all your colleagues, it may be just that simple. If you lay out the most beautiful vision for selling cookies to raise money to build an indoor domed water park, the problem lies with your idea. Assuming you're wrong about half the time is a good rule of thumb. To eliminate the notion of your wrongness as a possibility, talk to a few people who have good sense. If your sensible friends have taken the Myers-Briggs assessment, try to find some sensors and thinkers. These guys are grounded in what's practical, and they're not afraid to tell you that you're full of crap. Indeed, they may discourage you a bit more than you'd like. If this is the case, just keep your chin up and give their perspectives honest consideration. If you can adequately satisfy these beastly inquisitors, then you can rest assured that your idea is doable and has merit. On the other hand, don't shy away from doing something that is hard only because it's hard or doesn't meet that censor's approval. Doing the impossible is usually a blast. Also, try bouncing your idea off some other trusted advisors, perhaps your grandma or someone else who has had experience with the area in question. If you're considering hosting a huge event, look around to see someone else who has done something similar. You will go far by bearing in mind that your ideas are not always the superior winning ones. Also remember that your objective is not to enjoy a power trip by making your organization do as you please. Rather, your role is to facilitate the realization of your organization's mission. And often, it is the other guy who has the brilliant idea that will get the job done. Here are a few questions to ask while exploring whether or not your idea makes sense. Does this project fit cleanly into our mission? How specifically? Will our members have fun doing this project? Given our current resources, time, money, people, and commitment levels, can we pull this project off? If not, what would we have to do to increase those resources? Do note that you can never fully eliminate the possibility that you're wrong. Therefore, always be open to considering that your idea is wholly inferior to someone else's. If you keep this open-mindedness, your peers will respect you, and you'll find that you have less trouble persuading them than you initially anticipated. But if your idea is solid and things still aren't moving, read on. They're still not listening. After you've bounced the idea off of some people, and they assure you that you are sane and that the idea is worthwhile, you may still find that nobody cares. Have you ever announced a project at an organization-wide meeting, only to find that people are just chatting, doodling, and doing their own thing? Or maybe people are enthusiastic publicly, but they don't have the internal commitment to follow up. Such negligence is a particular problem within organizations in which people never really intended to do anything. For instance, often members join honor societies solely to be honored. As a result, they will do what's required, but little more. They are clinging to the hope that the other guy will do most of the work. Such passing of the buck can create quite the frustration. When everyone is trying to dodge responsibility, progress slows to a crawl. Professionals have studied this phenomenon and given it several names, including shirking, the free rider problem, and social loafing. An individual realizes that he would enjoy himself more by not working so hard because his contribution seems a small part of the whole, but his loss of free time is substantial. Individuals within the group loaf because they think that others could make up for their lack of effort and it's no big deal. You may be familiar with famous social psychology experiments related to helping. The researchers discovered that when a person is stranded on a busy highway amongst hundreds of commuters, he is less likely to be helped than if he were on an abandoned road, despite the huge difference in the number of potential helpers. Another study showed that when people in a group were asked to tug on a rope as hard as they could, each individual's effort was less than it was when he performed the task alone. Shirking problems all stem from the same diffusion of responsibility concept. The thought process goes, oh, there are plenty of people to take care of that. You, as a student leader, need to be wary of this fallacy and recognize that the larger the group, the more this phenomenon will plague your advancement. So a powerful solution to this dilemma is to talk to fewer people at once. Often, when you address a group, your words will dissipate among the crowd, making minimal impact. But if you directly speak to particular individuals and subgroups within the crowd, you will find that these individuals respond with much more energy and liveliness. People feel special when you single them out for an important assignment. They grow to believe that they have something unique that you need. They want to be wanted. It feels good. So you may find that you have to work your magic behind the scenes in order to give many individuals ownership and therefore procure widespread support. The United Nations is a useful analogy to illustrate this sort of process. It's incredible how over 190 nations can all agree to support a single decision. But, contrary to popular belief, representatives don't gain their support through their bold speeches during the sessions you can see on C-SPAN, but rather through schmoozing in cafeterias, back hallways, and cocktail parties. It's been said that the only cardinal sin at the United Nations is going it alone. Therefore, the savvy representative is the one who gathers support behind the scenes, gradually amassing a strong coalition of individuals committed to advancing a particular agenda item. Such coalition building is precisely what you want to do within your organization. Don't just shoot out an idea and just hope that the group eats it up. Start by seeing if you're wrong. Then, see if your group's key influencers are in support of the project. Ah, but who are those key influencers? And how exactly do you get the ball rolling? Magicians. Some people just got it going on. You've probably noticed that certain people can work a room like a pro, and they seem to have people flock to them because they are truly a joy to be around. Other people seem to wield a silent influence. Either way, when they speak, people listen. These are exactly the kinds of people you want to support your project. Take a moment to identify these people within your organization. Sometimes they have titular authority, chairman of blank, president of this, etc. And other times, you can just tell that they're somehow the main person in a group. If the answer isn't immediately obvious, ask yourself these questions. Who seems to get the most laughs from their jokes? Who gets the most head turns and nods when he or she speaks? Who gets the most eye contact while communicating? Whom do I really respect? Whose example seems to be followed most readily? Whose opinions get the most nods? Who has the big crowds around him just before and after meetings? Whom would I feel most comfortable having by my side in a pressure-filled scenario? Whose words seem just right? After you've identified a handful of such magical influencers, approach each of them in an individual or small group setting. Again, this approach brings on that special feeling. Sometimes your relationship with these individuals may not be on a comfortable, friendly, sociable level. So it seems a little odd to corner these people. If you're feeling such anxiety, just bear in mind that you're actually doing something for them. You're stroking their ego by requesting their valuable input. You're providing an opportunity to seek excellence and make an impact. People often crave such opportunities, but feel left behind. Providing this opportunity is as simple as saying, for instance, Tina, you have a great head on your shoulders. I would really value your input on this idea that I've been playing around with lately. Are you available anytime soon to chat about it? As you enter into these appointments, make sure you have the full intention of incorporating their feedback and input into your project. Really listen to them so that you are enriched and they feel like they are contributing something. If you start chatting with them, but systematically ignore everything they tell you, not only will you fail to gain their support, but you risk alienating them in the future. They'll think, well, I spent an hour with him last time and it was a total waste. He didn't use a word I gave him. So, with your appointments and heart in the right place, the next step is to get on their wavelength. People like you and me, after you've set up a meeting with a key influencer, herein referred to as partner, you may try a fun technique to get things off on the right foot. Few people know about this technique despite its potential efficacy. It's called mirroring, and it's quite simple. You start the mirroring process as soon as you're engaged in your dialogue. While your partner is speaking, you simply mirror your partner's posture. If your partner is slumped over a little, you slump over a little. If your partner's arms are folded, go ahead and fold yours. If your partner has her legs crossed, cross your legs. If your partner has a hand by his face, put your hand near your face. No, really, this isn't a twisted joke. Admittedly, the technique may sound downright silly, but it does much more than amuse babies. Stop, think, and review your previous observations of people, and you may notice people mirroring each other all the time. Scientists who have studied human dating rituals within bars have noticed a repeated pattern. Two young hopefuls will initially turn their heads to each other, then their shoulders, then their whole torso, all the way down to their toes. They are essentially progressively mirroring each other as they feel an increasingly stronger connection. You can also note the mirror in action when you observe a well-established relationship. You might find an elderly couple sitting on a park bench in the exact same posture. You could also notice two good friends walking and swinging their arms in perfect synchronization. Often two buddies sitting next to each other at a conference will maintain identical positioning of legs, arms, notebook, head, and writing instrument. If you look for it, you'll find close people mirroring each other already. So just as you turn the tables to make your body posture create emotion and commitment, you can also back your way into feeling connection with your partner. Because posture affects emotion, you get to experience a little piece of what your partner is experiencing by assuming the same posture. It naturally follows that when you're feeling the same thing, you'll feel a connection. In mirroring another person, you're also sending a subconscious message, something like, hey, you can relate to me. Just look, I'm a lot like you. As a matter of fact, I even look like you at this very moment. If you're feeling wary about mirroring your partner's every move in perfect accuracy and synchronization, good! Indeed, if every time your partner in leadership begins to scratch her nose, you also lift your fingers, she will quickly assume that you're mocking her. As you can imagine, that's not the result you're seeking to create. Mirroring is not mimicking. Gradually adjust your body posture so that it roughly correlates to your partner's. Don't adjust the second your partner adjusts. Rather, let it flow smoothly from your body in a natural fashion. Another way to build rapport related to mirroring is called matching. Here you match other points of your partner's being. Match up your breathing to your partner's breathing. This technique is a good start, as it is powerful and inconspicuous. You'll never hear someone say, "Quit mocking my breathing, jerk!" If your partner is tapping his foot, you can tap your fingers in the same rhythm. You could also match the mood, pace, and tone of voice. Such matching achieves the same sense of similarity and bonding that mirroring does in a more subtle fashion. Try these techniques a couple times. You may be amazed at the results. You'll actually feel closer to that person. Even if it's not really doing anything for you or them, it does force you to pay more attention and pick up on more subtle cues. It's also hilarious when you hear people say things like, "You know, Phil, people like you and me," or fun occurrences of "we," as in, "You know, some people just don't understand how we..." You could be as different as humans can be, but somehow they've gotten the idea that your souls are intertwined. When you've got really deep rapport, they may even match you to ridiculous proportions. Knocking over beverages or rapping their knees on a desk during an attempted match is not unheard of. Now, mirroring is not some sort of magical Jedi mind trick that will transform every encounter, but it can often make an impact. So have fun and don't be weird or manipulative about it. I'm not quite feeling your flow. Regardless of how often or how loudly you communicate or how close you feel to your partner, nobody can understand you if you're not speaking their language. While you speak English, sometimes you aren't really communicating in your partner's underlying language. That is, the language he's using internally to represent his world. These patterns of thought serve as mental filters for communication. The language may shift a bit when the topic matter changes, but there's often a dominant theme. Richard Bandler and John Grinder discovered an interesting trend in their study of successful psychologists that they recorded in their book, Frogs and Princes, Neurolinguistic Programming, and their whole universe of NLP stuff. It's important not to get too carried away with all this, but they have some interesting points. They found that the psychologists who formed the strongest rapport with their clients matched people's means of representing their world. For example, when someone reports that everything seemed hazy, the successful psychologist would respond to them using visual language. You may have experienced a taste of this power when you were in grade school. Often, educators will attempt to assess students to uncover their learning styles. In doing so, they seek to identify the best way to reach each student. Three options dominate the menu. These are visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, which means sort of touching, feeling, and doing type learning. If teachers use this information, they customize lessons so that students could apply their preferred learning styles. For instance, looking at pictures of rocks did little for the kinesthetic learner, but playing around with those rocks made all the difference in the world. If you really want to convey your ideas to your partner, talk to them like a second grader. I don't mean being patronizing, but rather make a special effort to communicate in the fashion that makes the most sense for them. The same languages people use for learning, they also use to represent the world around them. They color people's whole world, so their speakers can't help but give you constant clues. Have you ever heard someone say, "I see what you mean," or "that rings a bell," or "I'm feeling you"? If so, then you've heard someone offer you a little bit of an invitation. It says, "This is how I think. Check out my world." Indeed, these three phrases correspond to the visual, auditory, and kinesthetic languages, respectively. People naturally communicate in these ways, so you need only listen to how they're expressing themselves. There are dozens of ways to say, "I understand you," but the ones that your partner chooses indicate what mode he or she is operating in at the given time. When you listen to someone communicate within that language, you ought to follow up by communicating within that same language. What follows is a quick list of phrases that will tip you off to your partner's style. When you hear someone use one of these phrases, it means that their minds are currently operating in that style of thought. Visual phrases. "I see what you mean. I'd like to show you a few things. Picture this." "I don't share that perception. It's worth taking a look. It appears that something is amiss. The future is bright. In light of the current situation, that's about as clear as mud. His language was colorful. Did you notice? That's certainly a beautiful vision. This concept is still a bit hazy to me. It came to me in a flash. Just imagine." Auditory phrases. "Sounds good to me. Did you hear what he said? Let's discuss this further." "I'm listening. That shirt is loud. He was certainly articulate. He had a pronounced chin. I'm really resonating with that. I believe our groups could work together in harmony. That really struck a chord with me. To tell you the truth, I'm not sure if that's wise. I hear you, loud and clear. That's unheard of. Did I mention?" He made his remarks. Kinesthetic phrases. "I'm feeling you. That exam was rough. She's a sharp one. He seems to have a firm grasp on the game plan. I found it very touching. It should be a smooth ride from here on out. Do you think you can handle all that? That'll be hard to pull off. I'm under a lot of stress. Get a grip! Whew, what a rush! If you catch my drift. The pressure is on. I might have to pull a few strings. I feel your pain." By communicating with your partner in his native language, your ideas will seem much clearer. If your partner's minds are running in visual mode, then by all means, paint an exciting image. If they're in auditory mode, make sure your language is rich and resonant, almost poetic. if they're operating kinesthetically, drive home the point with action and emotion. Minds get into one of the three zones and interpret information most simply and easily when it aligns with that zone. Further customization. Speaking in your partner's language is an excellent foundation for getting your point across. To kick it up a notch, you may want to further adapt your message to appeal to another aspect of your partner's mental preferences. Do you recall the Fabulous Four from the first chapter? Well, it turns out that each representative of this group prefers to hear information differently. When presenting information to intuitive feelers, NFs, those warm, fuzzy people, start your communication with the overarching theme or big picture. Then, reinforce that vision with how your concepts will affect the real humans involved in the operation. NFs love to see people excited about upcoming possibilities, so be sure to make this connection crystal clear to the NF. How will people's goals be reached, values fulfilled, feelings impacted? Tackle it from the people and relational perspective. When trying to sell to an intuitive thinker and tease those brilliant problem solvers, repeat the big picture opening. But when elaborating, however, you'll want to follow up with logical options, examples, and possibilities that naturally flow forth from that big picture. Remember, logic is the key thing that persuades a thinker. Show them that you've thought through a compelling future of possibilities, and they will divert their brain power to your cause. If you really want to hook them, give them an elegant outline and then provide them with an unsolved piece of the puzzle. Sensor judges, SJs, those dependable workhorses, want to hear steps, procedures, details, details, and more details. These peeps will probably demand the most preparation from you. You need to lay out a full-blown game plan, as they don't want to have much to do with something that's half-baked. Have a calendar or timetable prepared, complete with deadlines. Judges like to know not only what things will get done, but when things will be done. The only thing as challenging as satisfying an SJ's thirst for details is figuring out how to make her feel included in the planning process. It seems like you've already done all the thinking. So try to find a middle ground between 100% detail and a very sketchy plan. Sensor perceivers, SPs, those witty bundles of impulse, are primarily concerned with one thing, fun. If you provide an SP with a detailed plan with every responsibility spelled out, he may vomit. The SP is looking for excitement, adventure, and spontaneity. Show the SP how your idea will generate awesome moments and memories for him and the organization. Make sure that your game plan leaves enough open space for silly randomness and that it has enough options to satisfy this impulsive guy. If he has room to play all over and around your idea, then the SP will be satisfied. It can be tricky to nail down a commitment from an SP, but if you make him feel like he can enjoy his freedom, then you will be victorious. So give the people what they want. If you stack audio, visual, kinesthetic customization atop personality customization, each word can have maximum impact. Talk in ways they understand and plans they'll remember. Influence universals. You've already gotten off to a great start in your communications, but you can add some icing to the persuasive cake by applying the principles social psychologists have known for decades. Fortunately for you, you've already significantly tapped into the first universal principle, liking. Liking. It may seem rather obvious that people prefer to do favors for the people whom they like, but do you conscientiously make the liking concept work for you? At this age, it can be fun to be rebellious, wildly proclaiming, "I don't care what anyone thinks about me." But the more you've sowed seeds of liking, the greater influence you will hold among your peers. The thing to remember, people like other people who are similar to them. The old phrase, "birds of a feather flock together," rings true. Examples abound. Humans sit with people similar to them during mealtimes. Students often self-segregate themselves by gender, race, personality, and a host of other factors. Each table can seem like a whole different universe. One's noisy, the other's quiet. Most people also live with persons similar to them in their college apartments. Despite the cliche, people date persons similar to them more so than they date opposites. One student reported that his last four romantic interests were all ENFJs. His Myers-Briggs type? ENFJ. The odds of that happening by sheer chance are exceedingly rare. Clearly something else is going on here. A key to utilizing the power of liking is to communicate how similar you are. You've already gotten a leg up on this task by using the mirroring technique, communicating in your partner's language, and adapting your message to your partner's style. When you perform such adaptations, you are sending a strong message. I am similar to you. Love me. Continue to apply the skills of mirroring, language matching, and personality adjusting. In addition, seek out and repeatedly reference as many commonalities as you can find with your organizational chums. Whether you share the same hometown, classes, or hobbies, bring it up. Bind yourselves together with the witty we or us where possible. For example, sharing just doesn't come naturally to us Monopoly champions. Use your own style and highlight the connections. Reciprocity. Has somebody ever given you a present and you responded, "Oh, I feel bad," because you didn't have a present for her? If so, then you've just felt the scourge of reciprocity. Humans naturally feel obligated to return favors for each other. Anthropologists theorized that such obligation was an adaptive human feature that enabled people to cooperate in new ways for survival. People could be assured that their efforts were not wasted by caring for another and receiving nothing in return. Rather, the caregiver would be repaid in due time. You see reciprocity every day, whether people are giving gifts, buying meals, or swapping favors. You can utilize this principle by seeking out ways to do favors for people. Zig Ziglar, a legendary salesperson and motivational speaker author, says, "You can always get what you want, just so long as you give enough other people what they want." That's reciprocity in action. Start hooking people up. It's karma. Just be a helpful human. When you're in need, they'll be there for you. You can even invoke reciprocity by merely making concessions in a discussion. Once again, it pays to admit that you're wrong. If you retreat slightly from a position, your partner will feel obligated to do the same. Another fun reciprocity opportunity arises when someone says thanks. Here, you have an excellent opportunity to cement an obligation. Thank Dr. Cialdini, the influence expert who has cataloged these universal principles of influence, for a magical alternative to "you're welcome." It goes, "I know that you would do the same for me." Be careful not to overuse that one. Consistency. All cynicism aside, people prefer to remain true to their word. Have you ever used the words, "I promise"? Have you ever used them with a child? You'd rather die than feel the wrath of your conscience heckling you as tears fill the child's eyes. If so, then you felt the shuddering power of consistency. It doesn't matter how cool your alternative activities are, you just don't want to be a liar. People across the globe experience the pull towards consistency with similar intensity. Parents, preachers, and teachers drill the importance of integrity into young minds from birth. In order to make consistency work for you, simply ask people just how much they're willing to commit and then hold them to it. If the commitment occurs publicly, it becomes even more official. If people don't quite measure up to their commitments, just bring them back on course. You may feel like a jerk highlighting someone's inconsistency, but they already know. And they may respect you less if you pretend that you didn't notice. Feelers. Strive to suppress your fear of meanness so you can take a stand on turning commitments into action. There's nothing wrong with saying, "Hey, Matt, didn't we agree that you'd have that done by insert date?" Another great technique comes into play when you approach your partner with your concept. Simply highlight something that he has said in the past, using exact words if possible, and connect it to your initiative. For instance, "I recall you saying you wanted to take our organization above the same old activities and into some exciting new directions. So I knew you'd love this idea." Using language like this, you remind them of their position and then create an expectation for them to act consistently with that position. Recap. To successfully get people on board with your plan, make sure that your idea is sensible and merits action. Battle the tendency to let the other guy do it by keeping groups small and responsibility high. Get key influencers on board by customizing your message to their mental representation schemes and personality preferences. Heed the principles of liking, reciprocity, and consistency so people will heed you. By carefully and conscientiously employing these techniques, you will be able to garner much more support than you've previously enjoyed. By winning the approval of key influencers within your organization, you create powerful momentum to propel your idea forward. These techniques are disciplines, sets of unnatural acts that create results. They will require practice, but you will be encouraged because you can see their effect pretty quickly. With time, you might find yourself facing a very different sort of challenge. Your people are working so hard that you find it difficult to keep up. Indeed, with so much group passion behind our activities, you may find that you need more ideas to keep them busy. To generate those ideas, we'll turn to